You're listening to episode 32 of the Where Your Keys Language Fluency Game podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on June 11th, 2010. Keys is a comprehensive system of language revitalization. It's viral, collaborative, and community-driven. In this episode, Evan Gardner and I talk about killing fairies, a technique we've recently coined that concerns the urge to translate your target language into your mother tongue, in this case, English.
We are driving up to Vancouver, BC, for Save Your Languages Conference with Dustin Rivers. We're just outside of Olympia, heading north on I-5. It's a sunny day. So the next topic is killing fairies. So this is your coining of the technique name. Do you wanna say where you got it?
Well, it's a combination of Peter Pan, you know, if you say I don't believe in fairies, a fairy dies. What?
Just said it.
Oh, no. Well, and also, it's A Wonderful Life was in there, you know, every time a bell rings, an angel gets his wings, and it's all sort of swirled together. The point being that every time I hear someone ask for a translation and receive it, so it's a full transaction. I ask for a translation, and then you go ahead and give it to me. Bam. An opportunity for learning more immaculate language hunting, for staying immersed in the language for as long as possible, for building skill in a big picture sense rather than just getting more language, more, I want it more now, you know? So sort of instant gratification isn't going to make your language acquisition any more effective. It's just going to strengthen bad habits. So that's really what, you know, killing fairies is all about. It's a cute way to... It's not the end of the world. Certainly, there's a funny thing here, and I've thought about this a lot. It's like, when we start playing Where Are Your Keys, what is that conversation in sign language? We translate the sign into English. One half, give, take. And we do the sign along with saying the Craigslist or what is that. So we start out by translating. To us, in our mind, a little bit of translation at the beginning gets the ball rolling. And this is sort of brings us into the whole contextual application. It's not that you never ever translate for no reason. No, you know, put it off. You know, it's not like some sort of fundamentalist thing. It's that what you're trying to do is leave behind as soon as possible the need to use the English bridge language or whatever your mother tongue happens to be that you have in common with your fluent fool that you're using as a crutch. You want to leave that behind as soon as possible so that you can transition into taking you know, those great 3D holographic notes instead of, you know... I mean, you put English in there and or whatever your mother tongue is, and it's going to immediately start to muddle meaning. You know, even simple words in English like yes maps differently than words, that same word that you might think is the same thing that you'll look up in the dictionary and you'll go, that means yes? Well, no, it doesn't. I mean, or it kind of does. I mean, wait, well, let me explain it. And then it's like, and you'll never be able to explain it all. You won't be able to predict the facial expression that the use of that word triggers that you think means yes, right? There's so much information there. So the sooner you can leave behind the bridge language, the better. But, you know, also, we want to do whatever will get the game going that we need to do. You know, we want to get the game going fast and fun as quick as possible. So it's all momentum building. So think of, you know, just make sure this isn't a fundamentalist ideology, you know. Where Your Keys techniques are not religions. They are tools that you use contextually. So once you're ready for it, once you've gotten up to one have give take, you're probably ready to start talking about killing fairies. Your players are going to probably start asking you, hey, well, what does this mean in the language? Or how do I say this in the language? And you're gonna start seeing those opportunities come up for them to now start learning their own ability to set up a good situation where they can get that same information without being like a baby bird who's going, feed me, feed me, feed me, right? Which is not what you want to do. Every time you prioritize language acquisition over learning to language hunt, you're going to be encouraging that baby bird to stick around longer and longer. They're going to become addicted to you as a teacher instead of being self-sufficient. So that's sort of my angle on the whole killing fairies thing.
And there's a couple of fairies that die. There's not just the fairy that dies that is the beauty of the meaning in the language itself, because now you've taken it over and you've pulled it into English. Yeah. So now you say, well, this thing that I've said in this language, oh, it means this in English.
Right.
So you've tainted somehow the meaning. You've certainly tarnished it to stand alone in its own language. It's almost like in your mind it thinks like, oh, it needs English for it to mean that. So somehow it's tied to English still, instead of just having it be its standalone beauty. And you've kind of done that by killing the fairy. You've sort of attached it. So there's the fairy of the language itself that's taken a hit. Then there's also the fairy of the game that's taken a hit. So you're in the game. Your setup's great. You're allowing everyone to see that obviously the conversation at hand involves this and this, and here are obviously the players, and this is the language you're going for. And then somebody puts a screeching halt to the game by saying, "What does that mean? What did you just say?"
Yeah.
Or they'll throw a ping back like this: "Oh, does that mean I'm not interested?" Like if you say "no me da las ganas," if you say "well, I'm not interested," oh, what a break screecher that is to the game. Now everybody stops playing, everybody's minds turn back into English. Everybody starts thinking, "Huh, does it mean that?" Their dictionary brains turn on, and now they're everybody's trying to translate. Now it's not just you, the game leader or the fluent fool. Now everybody's trying to translate for you, and then everybody says, "Well, no, it doesn't mean quite that." That yes that you're looking for, it doesn't quite mean yes. It means I agree with you, but not in this certain case, but in a normal sort. And so you're explaining, but now you're explaining in English. You're not explaining in the language. So the game has taken a huge hit. The whole room is screeched to a halt. And another fairy that dies is, just like you were saying, that you don't encourage and allow for the safe space for a person to set up a scenario where they're going to prove what they think is true. So they've already got that in their head, that sentence means this. They already think that they're right.
Yeah.
I don't know how many times I've sat and listened to people in English ask me, "Oh, this means such and such." And I'm like, yes, it does mean such and such, and you knew that already. Why are you even asking me?
Right.
You know, you're just asking me for a confirmation, which you already have, because the game that we've just played was so obvious and so clear and so beautifully set up that, of course, it's going to mean that.
Yeah, and if they asked you, "Oh, so that means, you know, trade," oh, and you said, "No, it doesn't," they would flip out. They'd be like, "No, yes, it does," and they'd start going, "It has to mean that," and, you know, and you could like start this funny argument.
That'd be funny.
You know what I mean?
Like,
yeah, and because just to, you know, show it's like, you know what it means, and you're gonna argue me with me. It's gotta mean that, right?
That's great. I'm tempted to do that now just for fun. You know, that might be a way to convince a couple of folks who incessantly kill fairies to stop killing fairies.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, yeah, really? So, and then there's this other fairy that gets killed. A couple of the fairies again. That now, if we're used to translating, then I don't get to have the experience of trying to set up good lessons and good moments so that the language can actually get transferred in the language with its cultural intention intact. And the student also doesn't have the opportunity to set up a clear ping back to say, yes, I do understand what's being said, and I'm going to confirm it by showing you how well I'm going to set up the transaction so that I can show you that I know and understand exactly what that means. I really, really do enjoy when people see the meaning of a word. And they want to prove to me that they understand it. Yeah. And so they'll start moving around the objects on the table. And I watch what they're doing. And I'm like, oh, yeah. Because I can tell that they understand by how they're starting to set things up. So they'll take away one thing and they'll put something else out. And they'll arrange it in some way. And just by how they start moving objects around, I can see that they know what they're doing. And so now I'm really listening to make sure that the language that they're going to use back at me is perfectly correct, because it's going to be 90% correct how they throw it back at me. And this is a fantastic opportunity to do one of those little minor adjustings that's going to give them a massive tool in the language now. And so now they've had the experience of setting me up to pull language out of me for a verification on what they think is true. I've had the opportunity to set up a lesson that allows me to push the information into them in the first place, and then a secondary opportunity for me to adjust their ping back, and then they're going to see it, and then they're maybe going to throw it back at me. So we're setting each other up for possibly 4 or 5 volleys to make sure that that little bit of language is now perfectly transmitted without going into English. So, yeah, just by asking for that translation, and then you get... It's fairy genocide, man.
Yeah.
It's 7 or 8 fairies die.
Yeah.
That just, you can see the Superman 3 pennies, time, minutes, moments just dropping off, and the energy waning, and the group just taking a hit for it. Which pulls into this next sort of part of dictionary addiction. So we talked before about dictionary addiction. In the Chaos Cafe, which I really liked your picture that you put up for the podcast.
Oh, yeah.
That's really nice. That's the side of the Chaos Cafe down on, what is that, 21st and Powell?
Yeah, something like that.
So it's a nice bit of artwork. So the dictionary addiction piece of this comes in where, so somebody hears a word. And they hear the word for red, rojo. And so they want it verified. And so they say, does rojo mean red? And so the fairy killing starts. The massacre begins.
Let me interject that there is a couple of appropriate sounds to make when a fairy is killed. Some people prefer eep, like eep. Right? There is also a sort of like a mournful ee. Okay. So just as a beginning, you have a couple of options. You know, once people know about killing fairies, you can now begin to speak for the fairies.
So does Rojo mean red?
Ee.
Does Rojo mean red?
Eep. Thusly.
Nice. And so that's what we want to hear when there are games going on, and when that happens. We don't want to hear, you know, people, well, I mean, of course there's going to be a couple people instantly signing, oh, technique, killing fairies, but then there's also going to be a couple people speaking for the fairies and dropping off.
I don't make the fairy dying sound unless somebody actually responds, yes, it means red.
Oh.
What I usually do is I look at the person in the eyes. I like, don't do it, man. Don't kill the fairy.
Don't do it.
They believe in you. They believe in you. Don't do it. You know, like it's a showdown, you know. So yeah, but if it's a successful fairy killing, they're definitely somebody has. Yeah, you're like the Lorax. I speak for the fairies. I speak for the trees.
And this really goes into this whole, like, into the game part of it. You know, there should be a bunch of people just randomly yelling, how fascinating, yeah. And technique this, and eep, and, yeah. And so there's this whole sort of soundtrack that goes along with a really fun game.
Yeah.
And, you know, of course, laughter should be riddled just throughout. So, and that's the other thing with this whole dictionary addiction and killing fairies kind of thing, is that really, people are really addicted to their dictionaries.
Yeah.
And when you start saying stuff like, don't translate, ooh, they get ornery and they get defensive and they start saying, well, that's how I learn and that's how I've been taught and who are you to say that I can't? And I mean, it just starts getting, you know, there a little anger starts coming up in their voices that we just want to avoid at all costs because, well, we actually do know what we're doing. But we don't want to pull that I'm better than you kind of card because that's not, we'll all get there together. But, you know, and it really gives us an opportunity to find some techniques that are going to smooth this over with some fun and joy and some gracious interpretation. So, but that dictionary addiction in their mind, that's the first hint of the dictionary addiction. Does rojo mean red? They're putting together the dictionary in their mind. So there's a couple of dictionaries. There's the dictionary that's sitting on the table. That's the book dictionary that some people are addicted to. There are online dictionaries that people are addicted to. Even like sign language dictionaries online that, you know, we didn't get hunted a particular word. And so somebody might use it in context, but in the wrong way. And then when they show it to us, we go, actually, that doesn't mean what you think it means. And then they kind of get angry. Like, well, you never told me that isn't what it meant. And it's like, well, you never asked.
And, I mean, really the only thing, it's not that you never want to look in a dictionary, I mean, or that there's no use for dictionaries. It's that there is a particular use for dictionaries. The use is, I wonder if this is true.
Yes.
Or I wonder how this is true.
Yes.
Or I wonder in what context this is true.
Yes.
And so that dictionary, that online ASL set of videos, you know, that where whatever you're using are like a set of amazing questions, like really on the point, really good questions that if it's not like a totally accurate, you're such an informed question asker that you're going to find very quickly exactly the use of this word. Whereas if you didn't have the aid of the dictionary, maybe this is a word you'd eventually find out, and you'd have to sort of find the borders of it. Now you can be really super efficient. So dictionaries are great. They're just not books of answers. They're books of questions.
Beautifully said. And so by bringing up this killing fairies part of it, we dictionary addiction kind of has this funny tinge to the sound of it as we throw it. Oh, you have a dictionary addiction. And no, I don't.
My name is so-and-so, and I have a dictionary addiction.
Yeah. No, I don't. Yeah. No, I don't. That's your problem, man.
First stage is accepting.
Well, I think the first stage is denial, isn't it?
Uh-oh.
Yeah, that's the first stage. I think the first stage to healing is accepting or acknowledging the problem.
Well, there we go.
Yeah. So that gets into this to the interplay between dictionary addiction and killing fairies. And every little millisecond here is starting to count. But that's a podcast for another time. One part of the dictionary addiction can also be writing things down for next time. And it's like killing fairies because you have this will to write things down. So you're in the middle of the game and something strikes you as interesting and so you write it down to make sure you remember. So people do this killing fairies things because they think they need to remember. Does rojo mean red? So they're doing it because they want to know that the thing that they think is true, and they want to make sure that they remember. So they'll kill a fairy or two just for fun, just so that they can remember. Or they'll start writing it down. Now, we always say, speak to remember, write to forget. There's a massive amount of, I thought I had a new technique name for you.
Yeah.
Scientific studies have proven. So just by prefacing what I'm about to say with that, all of a sudden, and I am absolutely willing to say that even if I don't know what the actual science is, but I know this one for sure, or do I, that scientific studies have proven that the stages of language acquisition go like this: understanding, speaking, reading, writing. So why are you writing? If you can't understand yet, why are you writing? If you can't speak yet, why are you writing? If you can't read yet, why are you writing?
Yeah.
So that's just a little conundrum to take home and think about. There's another trouble with writing that kills a couple fairies along the way. Especially if you're in the inner circle and you stop to write down something, brakes are squealing, smoke everywhere, and people are just sort of looking at you like, why are you doing that? We're playing a game here. We're trying to increase our ability to be excellent. Oh, right, right. And that also gets into one of the definitions of full, where when people start writing things down, it may be because they're full and they're trying to empty out some memory bank, and they're not calling full, but by doing that, it's a signal that they are full, which is full permission for other people to say, oh, full, you're full, wonderful, you're full, how fascinating, you're full, please step out of the inner circle. And if that's part of a self-care issue that people need to do, like, oh, no, I need to write this down because that's the comfort that I get because of all of my school training. Well, okay. And for a time, you know, you've got to give people that ability to self-care. But really, are there ways that we can help people wean themselves off of the need to write so that they can self-care in other ways? Killing a fairy. Does rojo mean red? That's another sign of full. And it may be a sign of full for the people who answer.
Yeah. Right.
So not just for the person who says, does rojo mean red? Because then that really gives somebody a signal to say, like, ooh, here's a little setup. So they pull out a red pen and they say, lapicero rojo. Piedra roja. And, you know, they really start setting up some different examples. By the time they're done, they're like, okay, all right, rojo means red. Okay. and then people can say, well, are you full or was that just a momentary lapse of reason? Probably it's full. And the other thing of writing things down is that it's still, people tend to write things down and then put a little equals sign and then the English equivalent. So now they're actively working their English brain, making these very strong English ties to the target language, which again kills that fairy of allowing the language to express itself in its own right, standing on its own. And then it also, there's a funny other feeling that I get when people write stuff down when I'm talking to them. In some ways I appreciate it because I'm like, wow, what I'm saying is really important,
right.
And they're writing it down. But, you know, in the end, I also feel like they're actually not paying attention to me because they're not watching my body language. They're not watching my sign language. They're not watching my body language. And everybody says, well, 90% of communication is body language. And I say, oh, okay, well, why don't you learn sign language then? And then you can actually tap into that. So while I'm speaking to you, I'm giving you a massive amount of sign language. And if you're not interested in watching the 90% of communication that I'm actually giving off, why are you sitting next to me talking? There are other people who want to sit next to me and talk to me, and I want to sit next to other people and talk to them because I'm going to watch their body language. And so when somebody starts writing stuff down, I kind of get this feeling like I'm being used a little bit, like I'm being just sort of taken advantage of, like they're just going to write down my story and then, you know, like, okay, well, you're not any use to me anymore, so I'll just kick you out the door now. And there's also this sort of feeling that when people write stuff down, so we've been talking lately about when somebody's writing stuff down, it's a signal that they're not coming back. So keep that in mind. I prefer a tape recorder over a notepad any day because it allows for at least the song of what I'm saying to really be remembered. And if you're writing down, it means that you're not coming back. And so that doesn't mean that you're going to be able to take 3D holographic notes because you're not going to transfer the way that I'm giving the lesson to someone else in the way that I'm giving the lesson. You're going to try to give them the lesson out of your notebook. So that's not 3D holographic notes that you're going to download. So,
you know, it's funny. One of our really good Wear Your Keys players, I mean, what's funny about these techniques is they're not obvious techniques. If they were obvious, then we wouldn't have to mark them, right? So when a technique is employed or wielded, it's an opportunity for something new, not for something that you should have known and what's wrong with you. Okay, just so let it be known that the design of this experience, the design of the game, is taking thousands of hours, years of work, and we continue to cull our experiences and other master teachers' experiences for the most effective teaching methods and turn them into techniques. So with that, we can have very good Warrior Keys players who we introduce to a new technique, and they're like, whoa, really? But wait, no, because I have this other experience, and I don't think that applies to me. So this is a story about that, where one of our high-quality Warrior Keys players, who really can, like, pull language like mad, but when she told a story about hunting an Italian fluent fool, she said, and then I went and wrote it down. And I was like, what? You wrote it down? And this was after us talking about the expanded definition of full. Writing something down means you're writing it to forget it. And all these issues around the use of writing too early, out of context, before you're ready. And she was like, well, but I need to write because it helped me to remember. I couldn't have passed on the Italian to you if I hadn't have written it down and then reviewed the notes. And the funny thing about that is, okay, so was that the only Italian speaker in the world? Like, was she never again going to meet someone who spoke Italian? Okay. She's probably going to get another chance. Okay. If she, instead of writing it down, pushed the language into her friends as best she could, friends and family, to store in her sort of living data bank, right? Maybe even then, collectively, the information still degraded. They still couldn't hold on to all of it. Well, what's the worst that can happen? You meet another Italian fluent fool. You start at the beginning, and you refire all those neurons. And now there's more people who are interested in what it is that they what faded in their database, and you've relearned it far quicker the second time than you do the first time. So it's all, like, totally honest. You've earned it honestly. There's no crutches involved. I mean, I love crutches, but let's use, like, truly effective crutches. And translating three-dimensional holographic immersive experiences into the code of writing is not the most effective crutch you could be using in this case. Yeah, a flip cam, you know, a high-quality audio recorder, your friends, you know, your living database, right? There's all kinds of great crutches. The writing it down actually degrades the information. You know, it's kind of, there's some lying to yourself in there about what it means. You're translating from one symbol set to another. It's not ideal. And as Evan said, you know, as you said, Evan, you do what you got to do in the beginning. If you're going to start twitching and having a seizure, if you don't take notes, good Lord, take notes, man. You know, or if you're going to get, you know, really scared and have an anxiety attack, well, take notes, you know, to take care of yourself. But just like with getting transitioning from using English as a bridge language as soon as possible, your job is to transition from old crutches that aren't truly effective to new powerful techniques that are as soon as possible.
And we were talking about this thinking, like, well, how do we convince people that these are actually more effective? Because it's difficult to say, like, okay, do the experiment. Stop writing and just do this experiment. Well, what if I do? Well, and it's kind of difficult for the science end of it to know, well, did it work? Or did it work better or faster because they didn't write it down and they started taking holographic notes? That's a kind of a hard thing to prove if somebody is used to taking notes, if they're going to learn faster without taking notes, because there's all these different variables involved. Are they going home and dumping what they learned into, you know, other family members so that they can start taking holographic notes? Are they, you know, ready and willing and fun? Yes. Have they replaced the note-taking with nothing? Have they replaced it with fun? Have they replaced it with a great attitude about how they're going to play and play and play? Or what's happened? Or now that they don't have their notebook, are they nervous? just having it with them, does that make them feel more comfortable? So they're going to play more because they've got the backup notebook in their pocket, but they're not going to get it out. So there's all these sort of variables there. And we're thinking that the way that we wean people off of that, if we have to do any weaning, of course, perfectly, it'd be great not to do any weaning at all, is just to have a stronger lunatic fringe. Just more people that are playing so that people can look around and go, oh, no one else is taking notes. Maybe I don't have to either.
Yes.
So that's why we're also trying to get as many Wary Keys players active in this region so that when we have a new language that needs help, we can bring a bunch of very trained lunatic fringe Wary Keys players so that we can model this very effective tool without having to convince people. Because I think there's a huge time loss there because their dictionary addiction is just fighting, just alive and fighting, and they don't care about fairies, and they're addicted to the dictionaries, and they're writing it down because they're never coming back, and oh boy, all this stuff. So I just wanted to really lay that all out to show how all of these things are woven together in this unseparable tapestry, just like many Wary Keys techniques are so linked with each other that you start getting this array of techniques, not just one at a time. You start employing them one at a time, but pretty soon you start really deploying arrays of techniques, not just throwing one or two.
That's it for episode 32 of the Wary Keys Language Fluency Game Podcast with me, Willem Larson, recorded on June 11th, 2010. Thanks for listening.